Today, we're continuing our series called Serve. And we've been talking about the capacity God has put in every one of us for greatness. And so the question I came to ask you this morning is, what did God make you for? We know that God made us to love Him. We know that God made us to be in relationship with Him. But God also made us for lack of better terms, task purposes. He also made us to be with Him and then to do certain things. Certain things that only you can do. Certain things that maybe people with gifts and strengths like yours can do. Things that He has designed you on purpose to do. What is it that you do, or what is it that you could do, that if you were doing it, you would say, I was born to do this. I was made for this. This is what my life is about. Beyond paying bills and living and dying and paying taxes and making it to the weekend and making it to the next Friday and paying my taxes and beyond all those routine things that have to happen, there is some point of destiny for me above all that, and I was made to do it. You've heard us sing this song all month. We were made for more. We were made for greatness. We were made to excel. We were made to be fruitful. The question is, how do you find out what you were made to do? Now, remember, we've been talking about the kingdom of God, and the rules in the kingdom, the principles of the kingdom for life are different than the principles that we live by and we're born into the natural world. The natural world is broken. The natural world is fallen. The natural world doesn't function right. And so the principles of the kingdom function differently. The way to get to something in the world is not the way to get to something in the kingdom. And so the path is different. The way you find greatness in the kingdom of God is different than the way you find it on American Idol or in Wall Street or in Hollywood. So look at John chapter 13. We'll read 3 through 5 and then we'll read 12 through 17. A little bit longer stretch of passage. What I want you to see is on the night that Jesus shared Passover communion for the last time with His disciples, He did something to give them an example. And actually, it's the only time the Bible ever says that Jesus ever said, I'm doing this as an example for you. John chapter 13, 3 through 5, let's listen to what happened. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under His power, and that He had come from God and was returning to God. So He got up from the meal, took off His outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around His waist. After that, He poured water into a basin and began to wash His disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around Him. Now, I understand today, because of cultural differences, we don't see the same significance of washing someone's feet. But I'll show you how that works in a minute. When He had finished washing their feet, He put on His clothes and returned to His place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for this is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. The instruction that we hear from Scripture comes right from Jesus' mouth that basically says, serve one another. This month we've been talking about the significant areas of serving in the kingdom. We talked about serving Jesus, our relationship with God, serving the family. And then from Jesus' own mouth we hear here, serve one another. Now the question I have is, why did Jesus save this act until the end? Why did Jesus not, when He called His disciples the very first time and shared the very first meal, why did He not call them together and then say, hey, let me show you what serving is about. Let me show you what the kingdom is about. Let me show you what greatness is about. Why didn't He begin with it? Why did He wait till the very, very final moment of community with His disciples to say, now that we've done all of this, Now that we've walked together, talked together, you've seen me do miracles. We fed the 5,000 on the hillside. You've heard teaching. You followed me from one town to another. We've basically lived in community together. Why did he wait to the very end to say, this is the final picture that I want to leave with you? Well, I'm not pretending to know perfectly the answer to that question. I will give you some scriptural principles that I think answer the question, why did Jesus wait till then? And I think they're found inside the greatness that Jesus himself exemplified in serving. Number one, if you're taking notes this morning, let me give you three quick thoughts. Why did Jesus want to leave this final impression and picture in his disciples' minds on what serving was? Why did he wait till the end to stress it? Here's the first reason I think he did. Serving is the only path to maturity. Serving is the only path to maturity. Look at verse 3 and 4 again. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. You know, in order to serve on the deepest levels, you have to know who you are. You have to know who you are. You have to know whose you are. And you also have to know why you're doing the serving. Sometimes we serve and we don't get recognized. Sometimes we serve and our best attempts go unnoticed. Sometimes our best efforts and most unselfish acts turn out bad. Sometimes we get criticized when we serve. How do you deal with all of that? In the end, let me give you the best test on whether or not you know if you're a servant of Christ or not. Whether or not you know what your maturity level in Jesus is. Are you ready for this? You know that you've become a servant. You know that you have matured in Christ when you act like a servant when you're treated like one. Everybody will run to the moment to say, yes. Everybody will be quick to respond, I want to be a servant. Not everybody will act like one when they're treated like one. Think about it with me for a minute. Being mistreated and still acting Christ-like is the deepest level of maturity. The path to that maturity is serving. Because serving humbles our heart. It prepares us for God's deepest work. The greatest servants the world has ever known, the greatest servant the world has ever known, endured the harshest mistreatment and the harshest criticism. But how did he respond? He responded in faith. He responded in love. He responded in truth. He responded in grace. He was probably the most understood and misunderstood person the world's ever known. I remember when I was a teenager, about maybe 16 or 17, and at 15, had committed my heart to Christ, maybe in the middle of my 15 and a half years old, somewhere in there. And the church that I went to, started going to, they reached out to me and included me, and they had a small school along with the church, so I was kind of the project of the church. People, because I didn't have the same family support that some other Christian kids my age had, the church would oftentimes make places for me to serve and to do things and to look out for me and help me and try to include me. And so I'd done all kind of stuff. And I would work in the summers a lot of times, weekends, different times at the school. We had a daycare. We had a school. We had a church. I at one point or another, painted almost every classroom in the school. Took the trash out, you know, knocked holes in the wall, put stuff in, took stuff out, all that kind of stuff. And so I remember one summer, or it was warm enough, I was out washing the church van. I was out washing, you know, pressure. Remember them old metal, heavy-handled metal pressure washer? Bah, you know, I was washing the van. And I was over there behind the school, and the little kids from the daycare came out to play, and they came into this big 6-foot fenced-in area. And I was just washing. They started talking to me, hey, you know, whatever. And I was playing with them. And then all of a sudden, I turned around. And one of the kids said something mean. I don't remember what it was. He said something that I thought, man, that's a bitter little kid right there. said something to me. And then I looked, I said something like that wasn't very nice. Something. And that, I'm telling you, that kid drew down a big hock of saliva. And he put his little lips up to one of those triangles in that metal fence. And he spit through it straight at my face. And I can still hear it splattering on my eye. And I'm just going to tell you, I mean, I was saved, I guess. But I'm going to tell you, it went across me like ice water. And I can remember thinking, you little thing, you're stuck behind that. You're lucky I can't climb that fence out to. I mean, I could just remember, wah. And I remember thinking, I'll show you. I reached over and grabbed that water hose, and I put it on me, and I said, psh. And I blew his little face off. And that kid went backwards, blah, 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 blah. It was like the Matrix. He was moving in slow motion. He fell backwards, pinned to the indoor-outdoor carpet. Hair shot up like this with a water stream. It hit him, soaked to his underwear. I'm talking about done. You ever have one of those moments where just after it happens, you begin to get this real sick feeling in your stomach, like, Jesus, help me. I should not. The stream began to withdraw down to a little trickle as I depressed the handle. And as the drips were still coming off the end of the faucet, I thought, what have you done? I should not have been here today. And you can imagine, is Barbara at? Barbara, thank God Barbara's not in this service. Barbara runs our CDC over here, and five fire alarms would be going off in her head if she even heard this story. You can imagine the potential lawsuit risk, neglect, and all kind of lawyer would tear you up. And our pastor's wife happened to be the leader of the daycare, and she was nice, but she walked the chalk. She was very good for a daycare. And she wouldn't even come talk to me. And I'm so grateful she didn't come talk to me. I don't know if I'd be your pastor today if she came and talked to me. She would have tore me up one side and down the other. But she sent her husband out. He was the pastor. And he was a great guy, jolly guy, friendly guy. And I can remember out there finishing thinking, you know, trying to justify that little kid got what he deserved. And somebody's got to straighten him out. And thinking all the time, I'm dead, I'm dead, I'm dead. And he came out to the van where I was. And I could still remember the look on his face. I've never seen him not happy except that one time. And he had this half smile. He goes, hey, he was trying to be friendly. Hey, he said, you just can't go around blowing kids' heads off. You know, that's not going to work. And then he began to tell me the consequences about how they had to call the parents from work and the parents had to take off work and they had to come and check the kid out and bring him a pair of dry clothes and change him. And oh, it was just terrible. And the kids were traumatized. They wouldn't take a nap. The whole thing was up in uproar. And I remember him saying that to me, and I can still hear the words come out of my mouth defending myself. I wanted to die. I said, but he spit on me. And he was kind enough to listen to me. And he looked at me and he said, what did Jesus do when they spit on him? It stabbed my heart like a knife. Knowing I was wrong before, being doubly proved wrong, I said, you're right, I'm sorry. And to his credit, and to the church's credit, and to his wife's credit, they kept me. And the best thing that I ever did is I kept serving. Because I served my way out of that immaturity. Oh, there's times I wish I had a water hose. But I served my way out of that immaturity, and I kept growing. Because I kept serving. And that serving and returning to the scene of the crime and having to face all those people and doing those things over and over again, it caused humility in me and teachability. And that serving set deeper roots of maturity in my heart. I realized that moment when it came to Christ-like actions and life, I had a long way to go. I don't know any mature Christians who don't have an avenue of service. In other words, there aren't any non-serving mature Christians that I know. Jesus came to serve, not to be served. Serving is the only path to maturity. Here's the second reason I think that Jesus waited to the very end and wanted to leave this final picture with his disciples. Serving's the only path to maturity. Serving's the only path to fulfillment. Serving is the only path to fulfillment. People who have no one but themselves to think about are the most miserable people on earth. When we focus on nothing but ourselves, we get stressed, we get depressed, we get overburdened. Little things mean too much to us. And we focus on things that don't really matter. And in the end, even if our influence is large, we still become smaller people, more insignificant people. And I'm talking about serving in a healthy way. You can serve in an unhealthy way. You can serve compulsively. You can serve out of codependence. The people that serve out of compulsion and codependence end up oftentimes burnt out and tired and empty. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a healthy, spiritually invigorated connection with the kingdom of serving. Look at the wealthiest people on earth. The wealthiest people in the world, they what do? They get to the top of the mountain and then they set up foundations whose job it is to try to help them figure out how to give away most of what they made. Why do they do that? Because they get to the top, they get to the end, they get to the finish line, and they realize that, you know what? It wasn't what I thought it was. Because they learned the same thing that Solomon did. In the end, living for yourself and building a kingdom for yourself is meaningless. Matthew 16:25 says, "For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it." Meaning and significance and fulfillment is found in serving, in giving your life away, in focusing on other people. That's the path to fulfillment. John 13:17 says, "Now that you know these things," do you remember what we read in John 13? At the very end, Jesus' final word on the subject to his disciples after he washed his feet and said, "Now you do what I did. You serve one another the way I served you." His final word was this in John 13:17. "Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." You will be blessed. You want to be blessed? You want to live a blessed life? Reach out and serve somebody else. That's how you find your life, by giving it away and giving it away and giving it away. Then your life is, Jesus said, then your life is blessed. In the serving of other people, your life is blessed. Now, we've got a little video I want to show. Are you guys ready for that? I know I've thrown you off time, but as you get that ready, let me just recap and we'll come back and have the final point. Serving is the only path to maturity. Serving is the only path to fulfillment. What I want to do is let you meet a couple of people in our church who jumped in and did a 30 serve back in January or sometime in the spring. I just want you to get to hear their story. Go ahead and play that.
Our family has been here for about 4 years. And at first it was difficult to find our place at the church. All of us can do a lot of different things. And so when Pastor Jay did the series about talking about 30 serve, we decided to take the opportunity to sign up and just to give the 30 days to see if we liked it. And we actually start to like it and we feel like we found the place where we can serve.
We're always looking for help in Cafe Mundo. And when Brooke called me and said she would be interested and that she had signed up through our 30 serve program, I was really excited to have someone new. And Brooke sounded really young on the phone, and I thought, you know, maybe she was a teenager. But when she showed up, she was really sweet and really excited about helping.
You know, Pam, the first thing I remember when you first came to me about 30 serve and what we do at Main of Charities was you asked me if you and Ty could do this together. Do you remember that?
I do, and that's what inspired me to to CIRM to start with, because I'd always looked for something that I could do with my son and that we could do as family.
Well, the reason we chose to serve together as a family is that we could definitely make an impact serving in that capacity. We joined First Teams because we really wanted to be kind of on the forefront of welcoming people onto the campus to really make them feel, you know, happy and excited about being here. You know, I sometimes say jokes to try to make them laugh and lighten the load. Whatever it takes to make them really feel like they fit in here at Kingsville.
The reason I started volunteering is because I wanted to find a place to fit in. I had been coming to Kingsville for about 2 years, and I was just ready to do something.
Sometimes the simplest things can make the biggest difference. You know, sort of like just waving at someone when they pull into the parking lot. You know, most people don't expect that.
Well, I think young people should serve, and I personally enjoy serving because I'm always smiling, and it's a way to get connected more with people. Like my brother was saying, you get to see people and make their day. You never know if they're having bad days, and so just a smile could make that day better.
She's been a great addition to our team, and we were so excited to have someone that had never participated in any ministry in our church, and to find her and for her to find us, and we're very thankful that 30 served made it happen.
You know, I remember in the 25 years that I've been at Kingwood and that, we've tried some other ministry fairs and that, but with 30 served coming with a write-up of what each ministry was about and what it did, made it open. That really has taken off, and that has helped, I know, Manna get the 4 volunteers that we just got recently.
It has just really opened our eyes up to the true meaning of being a believer, and that is to be a servant.
Pretty neat stories, aren't they? Huh? Serving's the only path to maturity. Serving's the only path to fulfillment. Number 3, serving's the only path to greatness. Some of Jesus' last words to his disciples were, "Serve one another the way I've served you." Matthew 20:25 says, Jesus called them together and said, "You know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them." Listen to these words, "Not so with you." In other words, it should be different with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great, if you have a pen, circle that word in your Bible. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Circle that word, servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Things in the kingdom are defined differently than they are in the world. Verse 26 says, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, the path that will lead you to that greatness is servanthood. I just want to say to you this morning, I apologize to you if anyone has ever taught you, told you, showed you, communicated in any way the idea to you that Christianity is a spectator sport. That it is about observing, it is about watching, it is about looking on while others live the adventure. That's not what Christianity is about. Now, I'm not saying that it's about doing your Christian responsibility. What it's about and what serving is about is, where do I find life? We've been singing, "We Were Made for More." Where do I find the adventure that God has planned for me? When do I stop hearing other people's story and start living my own? We were made for greatness, for living the dream God has for our life, but until we start serving, we don't ever find it. Serving is the path to greatness in the kingdom. Serving is the way, the path to find what God made you and I to do. You're never going to think your way into greatness in the kingdom. You're never going to plan your way to greatness in the kingdom. You're never going to become spiritual enough that you'll have greatness in the kingdom. You're never going to have an experience that's profound enough to give you greatness in God's kingdom. At some point or another, it's got to take action and move outside you. In traditional Christianity, we've told people, if you'll become a member of our church, you will experience the abundant life that Jesus promised to give you. And we have filing cabinets all over America filled with little cards. Hundreds of thousands and millions of people have signed them. And we have poured out thousands of gallons of ink signing our name on them. And we have slaughtered entire forests printing little paper cards that people sign and put their name on. Or we say, if you attend our church regularly, you'll experience the abundant life Jesus promised. And we have millions of pair of shoes that are worn out from coming and going to the sanctuary. Gathering for worship is our starting point, and it's our point of renewal. But it is not where the abundant life of Jesus is lived out. The abundant life of Jesus is lived out in our place of servanthood. We have the abundant life of Jesus, the life that He promised, when we find our purpose. And living that purpose that God made you for, living the life that Jesus lived, is where we find the abundant life that Jesus came to give us. So this morning, the question is, how do we find that greatness in the kingdom? Jesus defined it very simply, and He waited till the very last moment when He was with His disciples, almost as if to say, I'm leaving. But when I'm gone, the doors are shut, nobody can see, it's just us. But when I'm gone, I want you to do what I'm about to show you. You know, when there's going to be a long time of separation or permanent separation between you and someone, the most important things to you tend to come out right there. And Jesus was saying, this is the stuff. This is the thing. This is the deal. This is how the life of God will continue on in you and out of you. Serving one another. So this morning, as we kind of bring all this to a point, What I want to do is I want to introduce you in a moment to someone in our church that has found that place of significant service, of meaning, of purpose, of greatness. Sometimes we say, well, I have too many things happening, too many things going on. I want to introduce you to someone this morning. And I want to talk to you about 30 Serve. I'll talk to you about what 30 Serve is and how you can do one. I'm going to ask Jill Sharp and her friend are both here. Where are you guys? Right here. Come on up. Love to have you guys come. This is Jill Sharp, and this is Deborah. Is that right? Yes, I met Deborah this morning. Good to have you here. We're just going to sit down for a minute and just kind of do interview style. These guys go to University of Montevallo, and Jill is the Chi Alpha director at Montevallo. Stacy and I first met Jill about... what was it, about 3 years ago? And Jill had a heart for Montevallo and for her fellow students. And so, first off, why don't you tell us what year you are at Montevallo and what your major is? There you go. Go ahead.
Okay. I am a senior at the University of Montevallo. I'm a psychology major and a vocal music minor. And this is my fifth year, going into the fifth year. Hopefully, graduate in December. That's the plan. So,
good for you. Yes. Deborah, what year are you?
I'm a senior as well, and I'll be graduating in May. My major is in graphic design.
Okay. How did you get a burden for or start serving the students at Montevallo?
It's a really neat story, actually. About 5 years ago, a prayer movement started on our campus.
And it started off with just me and my friend my freshman year that we just, God gave us a burden. He said, start praying for a group to arise on this campus that would have a heart for me and that would believe the Bible and the things that I want for just the people here. And it continued in my sophomore year. We had a prayer group that met that summer, and we would meet every night at 10 o'clock and pray over the campus and for each other and just for the people. And we'd go till 2 in the morning some nights. And that continued. And my junior year at school, we had a different group that started, and we heard about Chi Alpha. This was actually Pastor Clark's and his wife Kelly's ministry when they were there. And we heard about this, and we heard about the beliefs and the values of Chi Alpha. And we said, all right, I think this is it. I think this is the ministry that God has put on our hearts. And so we started the process towards the end of my junior year of looking into things with student life and the SGA and trying to get this ministry just going with all of those things. And we had our kickoff last year. That was my senior year. And we have been praying for this ministry. We're going into the fifth year. We're excited about what God is going to do.
You know, I first met Jill, the station I did in Coffee Talk. She came to Coffee Talk. That's just on Wednesday night. We'd have people come to our office. We were new at the church, and we just wanted to give people a chance to introduce themselves and us to get to know them. And I remember Jill saying then, kind of coming in sort of almost squirmishly, hey, this is kind of what we're doing, you know, almost like she was telling me how they would meet together sort of in a small group fashion, and then we'd pray. And she said, almost not apologetically, but almost like, is there something else we should be doing? Is this, are we on the right track? And I can remember looking at her thinking, don't learn another thing. You'll mess it up. That's perfect. You are taking kids who may have not prayed in their life or prayed in a long time. You're welcoming them into your dorm room, and you guys are praying. I mean, you guys are praying and connecting with God. Amazing. Amazing stuff. Man, we oftentimes talk about how bad it is on school and college campuses and what's taught and all this. You got missionaries right here, right in the dorm room. And so I said, no. Don't read a book. Don't learn anything. Keep doing what you're doing. God is with you. And so, Jill, share with us maybe one of the moments or one of the people you met who you say, man, this was really maybe one of the reasons God had us do this in the first place.
It's really hard to pick just one story. I have one, but I will just say God has healed people through this ministry physically. We prayed over stomach pain. It's gone away. He has healed headaches. He's done really cool stuff. The other thing that God has done, he has given people their prayer languages through Chi Alpha. Deborah Nichols she's stepping up as a leader for us this year, and she received her prayer language on a Chi Alpha trip, which was really exciting. But the story that I kind of wanted to highlight to you guys was one that God really put on my heart. And there was a young lady that I met actually through my work. I was an RA on campus. And
Now tell us what an RA is.
An RA, a resident assistant, actually both of us are. They kind of are like a counselor, mentor. They're kind of in charge of a hall on campus, and they make sure the building runs correctly. And they're kind of a liaison for the students, and they help with
how many ladies are in a hall? How many people would you have?
What did you say?
There's about regularly 25 rooms to each RA, so
there's
about 50 students.
About 50. Isn't that amazing how God has given these ladies favor as they've served, and now they're, what do you call it, counselor, mentor? Sounds like a divine appointment, doesn't it? Okay, sorry.
So,
tell the story.
I met this young lady, and I through work, actually, through helping her in one of our residence halls on campus. And I said, hey, have you heard of Chi Alpha? Would you like to come? And she said, yeah, I guess I'll give it a try. And she came a couple times, and it really turned into a divine appointment. Because she came to my room one night and just told me about all this stuff that she had going on in her life. She was cutting herself. She was dealing with depression. She had addictions that were all going on in her life. And I said, well, can I pray with you about these things? Can we pray about it? And she said, yeah, sure, I'd love that. And so I got to pray with her. Unfortunately, a couple days later, she attempted to commit suicide. And she ended up in the hospital. And one of our Chi Alpha team went over to the hospital and was there with her. And I got to talk with her on the phone. And about a week later, got to meet her parents and met up with her in Pelham, Alabama at a gas station. We just hugged them. We were there to support them during that time that they were going through, and there were tears, and we cried, and everybody cried. And it turned out to be a really neat story because of this. I met up with her. She prayed about it, made the decision she needed to drop out of Montevallo. I told her, we are still a family for you. You might be gone from this school, but we are still here for you. We are still going to be there for you to support you. And I met up with her actually in Huntsville, Alabama. I was visiting some people. And she and I got talking. We went out to eat, and she said, and I asked her, I said, have you ever thought about a recovery program? And she said, no, not really. And she goes, but Jill, I'm willing to do anything to get better. And I said, girl, that's all it takes. And I was like, do you believe that God can do the impossible? And she said, yes. And so I was like, this is it. And so I felt like God asked me to tell her something. I said, have you heard of a program called Teen Challenge before? And she said, no. And I said, why don't you pray about it? It's a Christian recovery program. And, you know, we talked about stuff. And so insurance issues and, you know, a lot of prayer later, she said, Teen Challenge is it. This is the program. And I said, that's awesome. And I sent her the paperwork, did some research. She went through the physical. And I got to pray with her the night before she left for Teen Challenge. And we are happy to say she is at Teen Challenge right now. And God is moving in her life.
Isn't that great? You know, when you find where you belong in the kingdom, not only does it touch your life, but it has a significant impact on people around you who God has been trying to set a divine appointment of intervention for, who the enemy's come to try to destroy. And look how Jill ministered life in this one place. Okay, let me ask you one more question. You're going to Montevallo, you're getting a degree, you're preparing for your future. You know you're only going to be there for a short time. But somehow in your mind you said, but this time matters as much as the next time. And even though I won't live here the rest of my life, these people matter as much as the people in my future. And so many times in that season of life, we become so self-focused on getting ready for a career and this and that and the other. And I think every season has that temptation. That this season of my life, I've really got to focus on what I'm doing, and I don't have time to do that. Tell me the difference that your college experience you think would have been had you not spent the time serving. I'm kind of throwing you a curve. But just looking back now, you're a senior. You've had several years there. What would have been different had you not served that way in your life?
I mean, serving has given me a heart for people, I think. And it's helped me to see where God's heart is. If I hadn't had a chance, first of all, I would have been so much more focused on myself. I've had so much joy come into my life through serving and through, you know, being able to meet people and being able to support people and to talk to people about God's love. God has such a heart for people, and we live in such a hurting society right now, and a society that, you know, just doesn't have a lot of hope. And just being able to be a part of this adventure that God has on your life for serving people and for reaching out to people, there's never a dull moment. It's always a great day, and there's always something that you live for that's beyond yourself. And I really thank God for the opportunities that He's provided to us with this ministry and just in general to be able to reach out to people.
So would you agree with the thought we had this morning, serving is the path of fulfillment?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good for you. Yeah. Bless you guys. Thanks for coming. I know you're not used to speaking publicly, but would you give these guys a big hand? Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bless your heart. Thank you, Deborah. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming, y'all. As we're wrapping the service up, I want to encourage you, if you've not participated in the 30 serve before, today's your day. What is 30 serve? 30 serve is very simple. It's where we have in your bulletin a list of ministries that you can sign up for. And we're not like Jill and Deborah. This is a season of their life, and they found where they should serve for this season. The next season will have another place, another way of serving. But what we're saying is, rather than asking you to give a lifetime a year-long, a five-year commitment, we're saying, why don't you look around inside our church like the folks that you saw in the video, like these ladies, and why don't you try out, test drive, experiment. 30 serve means serve for 30 days, which usually means 2 to 4 times in a month. Why don't you serve for 30 days in one of these areas and just let God guide you? And when you come to the end, we have facilitators in our church that are ready to receive you, and they will contact you, they will help you, they'll tell you where to go, what to do, they'll tell you how to start. And if for some reason you get in at 30 days and you say, you know what, I'm glad I tried this, but what I learned is this is not what God made me to do. This is not where I fit. No problem. Stop. and then go do a 30 serve somewhere else. You're not obligated to stay there. But we're committed as a church to help you find what God made you to do. And we want to help you find that place. Now, let me give you a report. We started our serve vision for this year. We started this vision in January. Since January, 122 people have signed up for a 30 serve. 122 adults have signed up for a 30 serve. And 104 of them have already finished their 30 serve. And there are many still right in the middle of a 30 serve this morning, right now, as we sit here together. And so I want to encourage you, today's the day. Don't wait. It would be very easy for Jill and Deborah to say, you know, this season I've really got to focus on this. But I'm telling you, the right time to serve is now. It's now. You can find a place of serving that'll fit schedule, that'll fit time, that'll fit your lifestyle, that'll fit your gift, that'll fit who God made you to be. If God made you to do it, how many of you think He'll make a way for you to do it? Right? Isn't that right? But what we have to do is we have to give Him a chance. So let me show you this too. There's a way that you can go and sign up on our website right here. If you'll go to this is our homepage, See Soaks Tonight. Go over here, I'd like to serve. Push that button. See, click that button. Button. Trying to push it. Okay, there it is. Okay. And this gives you a description of 30 serve. And then down here, you put in your name, your email, your phone number. Put the little dot behind the ministry that you'd like to do a 30 serve. And then down like that, like Cafe Mundo. And then down here at the bottom is a overview of what those ministries are. Now, these at the bottom also, can you click on one? These will give you Cafe Mundo. Let's say we're going to serve in Cafe Mundo. Then the screen will go blank, and you won't know what to do. Then what will happen is, this will tell you the purpose, the description. You can kind of scroll down. It lags on the screen this big. But on your screen, it'll be fast. Description, strength, special consideration. So what it'll do is give you on one sheet this size, everything you need to know to serve, for example, for 30 days in Cafe Mundo. So it's mega user friendly. It's easy to do. It's easy to start. It's easy to say this isn't me and move on to the next thing. It's 100% easy. In our 4 year today, we have a team of people who have a little badge on that say 30 serve over at the 30 serve table. They have all the descriptions. How many of you don't have a bulletin? How many of you don't have a bulletin? Ushers, would you help me for a minute? If you don't have one of these or a bulletin, would you just hand these out real quick? Would you lift your hand if you don't have one of these right here? Guys, would you spread out and help us? Just kind of wave as our ushers go by. They'll be helping you in the next few minutes. If you don't have one, all it basically says is the same thing that internet says. Gives you the information, how to sign up, how to get started, what to do, what your options are. If you'll take this today, fill it out. You can go out into the foyer. There's 8 or 10 people there ready to talk to you. 30 serve badges at the booth. They can answer any question you have about any of those ministries, about when you start, what nights, what days, what time. They're ready for you. So if you would go out there, join the 122 people that in the last 7 months have already signed up for a 30 serve and are well on their way to finding the path to greatness. Would you stand with me this morning?